The issues that matter most, right here. The Drew Mariani Show
on Relevant Radio.
Well, what we heard today was the contrast between the Trump era, which had some illegal immigration, but it was contained, and the immediate change that happened under this administration. We also heard not just from a victim's father, but from a sheriff who represents one of the largest stretches of the U.S.-Mexican border, and how it's taken his people away. 44% of his jail occupants are undocumented criminals. It's taken him away from doing the regular police work he would do and the impact it's having to his community. So, yes, there were testimony on both sides. I would say on the Republican side, the facts and the numbers speak for themselves.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Yeah, that was Darrell Issa, congressman from California. Good afternoon. It is good to be with you today. Welcome, Maggie. Maggie's on the other side of the glass taking running the board, and Patrick Alog today. If you call in, he'll grab your call, get you on the air to me. And a great way to do that is 888-914-9149. We got a lot to get into today. Really good news with the economy. Is the Biden administration's plan working? We'll look at that. I want to talk a little bit about this Chinese balloon that is flying over the continental United States and so much more. Fentanyl, we got a lot to break down for you. But let's talk immigration first, something that it really ties into all these problems. You know, I take a look at how many Americans are dying in this country right now. The DEA seized, I don't know if you know this, in 2022, enough fentanyl to kill every single United States citizen, every American. That's how much has come over. It's unbelievable. It's because our borders are porous. Right, the House Judiciary Committee on Wednesday, they heard testimony about what's going on down with Mexico. And what they heard, well, it was not pretty. 2.76, that's your number. 2.76 million people illegally crossed the border in the last fiscal year. That beat previous records by more than a million. So what's going on? Is this deliberate? Is there a particular ideology that's driving this? What's the end game on all of this? And rather than speculating or philosophizing, help me with that word, Maggie. Is it philosophizing? Does that sound right? Philosophizing? Rather than philosophizing about, you know, where this may all end up. Let's look at what's happening right now. Right? The DEA seized record amounts of fentanyl. Where was it taken? At the border, right? 100,000 people in our country died from overdoses from that drug. It's horrible. It's buried in all sorts of other drugs. You know, people are looking at it for, you know, they're looking for, you know, in fact, one other note here, and I don't want to get too off tangent on this. I didn't intend to talk about this. I saw an article the other day, and I mentioned this to one of my producers, that we should track this story down, that pharmacies in Mexico that are legitimately selling drugs, right, or fulfilling prescriptions, let me put it that way, they're now finding evidence that some of those prescriptions have been tainted with fentanyl. I don't think it gets any more terrifying than that. How does that get into the supply? You can see how the drug cartels can smuggle it over the border, and how somebody on the street, you know, wants to buy some opioid, or you know, they're going to get some cocaine, or they're going to get whatever they're going to get, right, that they want to get high with or fired up on, and it's laced. How did that happen? I'm going to talk more about this at the bottom of the hour. Sheriff Mark Daniels from Arizona testified that there's just this large increase of what's called aggravated attacks toward law enforcement. He also said the crimes happening at the border are taking up nearly half the time of the office and is keeping them from doing the job they normally do. So this border crisis is creating an unprecedented problem. They captured also, just one final note on this, a number of people that were in the terror watch list. Right? The terror watch list. There are hundreds of thousands that have gotten away. They haven't just walked up to, you know, border guards and said, hey, you know, here, I'm from Guatemala and I'm seeking asylum. No, these people are dressed in ghillie suits and camouflage and they're evading law enforcement. Why? You don't do that unless you're up to nefarious purposes. They found child abusers and so much more. I don't want to go off too much, but I really think the border is tied into this fentanyl crisis. I also believe that China is tied into this fentanyl crisis. We'll talk about China coming up a little bit later, too. We were talking about the balloon, but, you know, Anthony Blinken basically just canceled his meeting with China indefinitely. So we don't know how long it'll be or what's going to take place there. But that was a pretty big development today. Let's get this issue right. Let's get it right. I mean, there's such dysfunction in our country. I think about the state of Utah, and I just want to I want to applaud Utah. And there is some good happening in the country. I know we can get concerned about what's happening down south or across the country in other areas, but Utah became the first. They became the first in the nation to pass a new law that outlaws transgender procedures for underage kids. So I just say thank you for a little bit of common sense, for a little bit of rationality. Thank you for doing what's right. You know, you're not the parent. We need to make sure our parent, you know, the parents of these kids don't make these, you know, don't permit this type of behavior. And at the same time, these underage kids don't evade their parental authority. So the Washington Watch was reporting on the Utah trans bill. And not only are they reporting that this new law will outlaw transgender procedures for underage kids, but they'll also no longer be able to take life-altering drugs and undergo those surgical procedures that will permanently mutate and change their bodies. Here's a little bit more. Listen.
Now, this creates a pause. They're referring to it as a moratorium on gender reassignment for children unless that child has been diagnosed with gender dysphoria. And of course, that diagnosis is very easy to get these days, as you have a lot of clinicians who will give that with not much examination. Now, the bill does attempt to establish what that is, but the reality is there are a lot of practitioners who will diagnose someone with gender dysphoria quickly.
As the medical community has been politicized on this issue, and you see the associations, the medical associations pushing this. So, in fact, you see those who are hesitant to give this designation, this diagnosis, are often piled on by the left.
That's exactly right. And that's the second part of this bill. In addition to this moratorium, what the legislature in Utah has said is, we're going to study this issue. Let's go consult with the experts, and then we'll see if we're going to lift this moratorium down the road.
So the ACLU is not happy with this, but the Family Research Council, you know, isn't happy with it either. The FRC says that this exception in the law is so big that anybody who wants to get through it can, as you just heard in that audio there. You could, and shame on these doctors, you know, that give you those diagnoses. I mean, it's we have to make sure that we do what's in the best interest of individuals, and cutting off their genitalia and mutilating their bodies. It's, I'm sorry, I know it might sound crass or even uncharitable, but I don't mean that. I just think these, I think somebody like that needs help. It needs help. You know, God created them a particular way, and there's a dignity in their creation and the way God created them. We need to help them see that. That exception allows for a doctor to diagnose a kid with gender dysphoria, and even in a conservative state like Utah, finding a doctor to give that diagnosis, as you heard, is pretty easy. So let's hope other bills are being considered across the country. It's still a victory. I don't want to downplay this at all. I am so glad that Utah took this step. But it does have a giant, you know, a giant hole right in the middle of this thing. You can easily get around it. Maggie, you just heard a heartbreaking tale, didn't you?
I did. I saw a testimony of a mother talking about how her young child that she adopted through the foster care program was going to public school, and everyone from her school counselors to physicians, lawyers, judges had failed her daughter at every step of the way because she was a normal kid that was experiencing difficulties in school. But the counselor started, you know, suggesting maybe she was transgender. And so she started dressing in boys' clothes and going by a different name. Wow. This young girl ended up being trafficked and taken to another state and abused and abused and abused and abused. And even when this woman and her husband went to try and save their daughter because in the state that they had to travel to, and they kept referring to her by her original name and pronouns. Wow. The judge said, no, you're not allowed. You're abusive. You're not allowed to take your daughter home. And she ended up then going to a boys' correctional facility where the abuse continued.
Oh, how horrible.
Yeah. So it's the video is like 6 minutes long. But
too long to play.
It's maybe too long to play right now, but it's the story of Sage. And if you type in...
Well, maybe put it up on our social media. We can link over to it if you want to watch it. Is it worth seeing?
It's worth listening to, and it's heartbreaking.
Well, maybe we should pull the audio. Maybe we'll play it in the coming weeks.
Sure.
Let's do that. 6 minutes is a lot of time right now. We have got Dakota Wood, who's going to be joining me in a few minutes here to talk a little bit about this Chinese balloon, so I don't want to shortchange him. But say a prayer for that poor girl so deeply wounded. And again, it's from bad policy, right? It's from bad philosophy and ideology is really what it comes from. It's from godlessness. That's really what it is. We've got a crisis of God in our community. You know, we rejected natural law. We rejected his law. And this is what ultimately happens. If you want to see this, Maggie will put it up on Twitter. It's at Drew Mariani Show. At Drew Mariani Show. That's our Twitter handle. Just do a quick search for it. It'll bring you to our thing. Please follow us there, okay? Please follow us on Facebook. And follow me at Drew Mariani as well. That's kind of a personal Twitter page. I'm really bad at Twitter. I know I need to be on it more. Maggie does a great job handling the show. But... you know, follow us. So when there's big news, I'll try to get it out. And maybe in the days ahead, I'll be a little bit better at it as well. But I always appreciate you communicating with us, even outside of the time we get to spend together every day. Hey, one more story here. Just one that I think is, I don't know how to phrase this. I'll just tell you the story. I used the phrase yesterday. Maggie shot me a look. I said, you know, things have gone the way of the dodo bird, right? And dodo bird, those dodo birds have gone extinct, right? But if one biotech firm has their way, and I just saw this story this morning, it made me laugh. I can't say that anymore. Colossal Biosciences is the name of this company. Same company that wants to bring back the woolly mammoth. Now wants to bring back the dodo bird. And they say they've raised enough money now to start doing that, along with working on the Tasmanian tiger. Now, this is, they say, going to take years. They say the first woolly mammoth calf won't be ready into 2028, but that's right around the corner. And investors believe there are other things the company will discover along the way, including new software. There'll be artificial wombs. There's going to be gene editing, all of which to me sounds kind of scary right now, but, you know, sounds very much Jurassic Park-esque, doesn't it? Sounds like something you'd see in a movie like that. Will we ever get to that technology? Who knows? Who knows? We'll see what's happening. We got enough problems today, right? Really big balloon floating over the middle of the country. That's a weird story, and I'm really trying to process it because I'm thinking, we're saying it should have been shot down. We should have taken it down when it was over Alaska, when it was over the Aleutian Islands. I'm assuming that the government knows more than we do, right? If this was a threat, then maybe they would have taken it down. But I don't know. Colonel Dakota Wood is going to be stopping by. I'm going to get his take on this. If you're not familiar with the story, there's a giant balloon. I mean, it's three Greyhound buses long. That's how big it is. It's huge. And the balloon, of course, I'm sure you've heard from now, is from China. And the Chinese are claiming, well, it's just it's a civilian weather aircraft that went off course. And, went off course right over Montana and over some of our most sensitive military bases that have nuclear weapons. And here's what we know so far. Maggie, do you have audio of this? Let me share some of this. The balloon was launched from mainland China. It traveled over the Aleutian Islands and then over Canada into Montana. It's now, according to the Pentagon, over the central part of the United States at somewhere around 60,000 feet. Most planes fly 30, 35, 45,000 feet, right? And it was spotted from aircraft, so it tells you how big this thing is. Here's a little bit more on the story. Check this out.
You said that this is violating our airspace, so why not take it down?
Yeah, so, clearly as we assess options and considering the size of the payload on this, looking at the potential for debris and the impact on civilians on the ground or property damage, again, running through the various factors and looking at in terms of does it pose a potential risk to people while in the air? And right now, as I mentioned, we assess that it does not pose a risk to people on the ground as it currently is traversing the continental United States. And so out of an abundance of caution, cognizant of the potential impact to civilians on the ground from a debris field, right now we're going to continue to monitor and review options.
It's a fascinating story. Right? President Biden apparently ordered it to be shot down. He is the commander in chief, right? He said, take it down when it was over Montana. But Pentagon officials said, hey, not so fast. Look, it could be a real threat to, you know, citizens underneath where we don't know how big the debris field will be, where it'll all end up. And the possibility still does exist. I've heard people saying, wait till it gets over the ocean, then shoot it down, right? It'd be a little safer there. But Pentagon's also clear that this is just a surveillance craft and that its incursion in U.S. airspace was deliberate. They say that there's, you know, satellites about 300 miles off the surface that probably have higher resolution and can do better spying than perhaps this balloon can. So what is it about the balloon? Is it a message being sent to the United States? Is there more to the picture than meets the eye? This is coming just before Secretary of State Antony Blinken was set to go to Beijing to meet with his foreign ministry counterpart over there. He has indefinitely postponed that trip because of this incident. I've invited Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood, who served in the United States Marine Corps for about 20 years, to join us. He's now Senior Research Fellow at the Defense Programs at Heritage Foundation and the author of their annual report on the Index of U.S. Military Strength. If you're a regular listener here, you know his voice and his great contribution. It's good to have him back. Hey, Lieutenant Colonel, good afternoon.
Hey, you know, it's always a blessing to be with you. Thanks for having me on, and I always enjoy our conversation.
Well, thank you so much. I thought of you this morning. I saw this report. According to early reports, the aircraft was first sighted by civilians in a commercial aircraft over Montana. I'm thinking, man, it had to be low because planes fly in that 30,000 to 40,000 foot window.
Right.
I'm assuming the military knew about this. They probably knew about it a lot earlier. What do you know about it, and what do you make of these sightings, and why is it now becoming such a big deal?
Well, you had a great intro. I think you hit all the major points there and the clip that you aired and stuff. Not surprising that folks in an airplane would see it. You know, the sun glinting off of the type of material used in these balloons is really going to reflect a lot. You know, we can see satellites in the night sky as they move across the background. So it's not surprising. The interesting thing here is because people saw it, has made it a big issue, and the government has had to respond. So in the Pentagon's press releases and the stuff coming from the White House, you know, these things have happened in the past. Nobody noticed, you know, the government handled it, and it wasn't really a big news item, but, you know, here we have it. Background on this, balloons have been used for hundreds of years, you know, going all the way back to the Civil War and before that. Since in the Cold War, these things were used. Our government today has a multi-million dollar contract with some private companies to build the same sorts of balloons that can carry large packages, you know, these boxes with various sensors. So this isn't anything odd. Mm-hmm. It just doesn't hit the public airways, right? And there are uses for balloons and that they kind of are invisible in the background. Normally, sensors pick up differences, either speed against slow, hard against soft, you know, a big metal submarine in the ocean that is different than the water around it, or temperature differences, you know, cold against hot and vice versa. So these things are really hard to capture over the Aleutians. You don't have anything to kind of intercept it quickly when it gets into Canadian airspace. We can't take action against it. And then it gets into the U.S. and there's that very real risk that the spokesperson was talking about of, you know, if we shoot it down, everybody would love that, falls on, you know, a schoolhouse or a farmer cottage or something like that, and there is risk to that. So, and I've got questions about the danger that this poses, and we can get into that, but that's some kind of the background why this is so newsworthy is somebody actually saw it, And now the government has to respond.
I was just curious. I mean, a lot of people speculate about the timing of this. You know, what's happening? Why is it, you know, now over the United States? Why is it lingering over sensitive areas of military bases with nuclear weapons? This is not new technology. I mean, this has been used during the Cold War extensively. We've seen this used. I think the Japanese, even during World War II, didn't they send bombs across the Pacific that hit either California or Utah or some other place? I wonder where this is leading. In the future, I heard somebody say that, you know, these are kind of invisible killers, like submarines in the deep sea. You know, that you can send these things into the sky. They can loiter for long periods of time. These high altitude balloons have been reported recently, above Taiwan and Japan and two other military rivals of China. So are we seeing a resurrection of this? Has this always gone on? And the fact that it can linger over a particular place, do they have control over this to be able to navigate it so it stops, or at least lingers over the Montana nuclear base?
Yeah, so yes to all that. These are not new technologies. They've been used for a long time. Because of new technologies, you can do interesting things with them. You know, the box that the balloon would carry, the box can contain anything. You know, you carry a nuclear weapon that, if detonated at high altitude, causes an EMP, an electromagnetic pulse, and could damage, you know, power grids and communication systems and all those sorts of things. Yeah. It can carry a conventional weapon. It can carry weather instruments. Yeah. You know, this is the fiction that the Chinese government is trying to propagate, is, oh, it's just a meteorological package, you know. And meteorologists actually use this kind of stuff to, you know, look at wind speeds and weather and all those sorts of things, you know. But this is clearly not the case with this particular balloon. Are they maneuverable? Yes. One of the concerns with shooting it down is underneath this balloon is a very large solar panel array, you know, like we would use on a house or to deliver, you know, energy to a city or something. So a solar panel array, why is it there? To provide electricity to the batteries that are running whatever the instrument packages is, right? The package could be photographic, you know, taking pictures. It could be passive in terms of what kind of emissions are coming from radar systems. You could be looking at details that come up out of this ICBM field, you know, the nuclear ballistic missile field up there in Montana and other places. So there's all kinds of things it could do, because it's a box under a balloon at very high altitude, right? So whether you shoot it down or not, the government has talked about the dangers of shooting it down. Yeah. There are benefits in actually keeping it aloft, that we can then collect intelligence on its configuration, what it's doing, how it's controlled. If you shoot it down right away, you lose the opportunity to collect that kind of information. You mitigate the threat by reducing your signature, you know, what you're emanating, how you're moving on the ground at these sensitive installations. And so because we know it's there, we know how to minimize whatever damage that this intelligence package could be causing. So it's being managed. There is a legitimate risk of what damage it could cause if it plummeted to Earth. And so just kind of let it pass over. On a geopolitical level, it's a huge thumb in the eye of America. This is China telling the world, hey, we can sail our stuff into the great power of the United States, and the U.S. is, you know, weak and doesn't have any ability to deal with that, right? So there is that kind of diplomatic, geopolitical thing that's going on. It shouldn't have happened, but states conduct surveillance on other states. You know, during the Cold War, we flew U-2 spy planes and the SR-71 all over the Soviet Union at altitudes that made it very difficult to shoot them down. Everybody uses satellites these days. You know, the capabilities that you had mentioned in the opening there are very, very good. They can take pictures of things as small as a license plate or a pack of cigarettes, right? So extraordinary capabilities, but they're on predictable tracks. We know what those orbits are. You could deal with them if you had to. A balloon, maneuverable, hard to detect. You know, it's just a different method and shows the asymmetry. You know, you have a strength, I'm going to find some way to bypass your strength and use a technique. Right. If we're worried about digital interceptions, well, I can just go to an old-fashioned piece of paper, write a note, and hand it to somebody, and you can't collect on that, right? So it just shows that it's a very complicated world. Countries are always trying to find advantage to find out what's going on in the other country, and you have to be willing to deal with that and understand that that these kinds of activities do go on every single day.
I figured the military, you know, they're clued in. They're going to make the right decisions whether or not this should be shot down or not. To your point of observing it, I think it's a great one. And I think it's something that I'm sure we could certainly do, because those satellites in orbit, like you said, they can read my license plate parked in this parking lot or a pack of cigarettes. You know, what's the balloon going to do? My thought would be this. Okay, the thing's traversing. We can track it. We can study it. We can determine what it's all about. I knew they scrambled some hornets up there to look at it when it was first spotted. Why not shoot it down later and see what the technology on the balloon is? See what they're using to surveil. Does that make sense after it crosses the U.S.?
Yeah, it does. You know, how would you collect that debris? But, you know, there are ways to do that, right? You know, you're going to shoot it down, you track it, you try to recover it and see or something like that. My 23-year-old daughter had this great idea. It tells you how many people are tracking the story, right? Oh, yeah. She says, well, if the Chinese are saying this is just a meteorological package that blew off course, right? Well, then why don't we just shoot it down, collect it, and tell the Chinese, oh, we want to help you. We want to return this package to you.
That's great.
Right? So if it's benign and innocent, what secrets are going to be revealed? You know, and see how the Chinese react to that. So it's all lies being propagated by China. I think there are legitimate concerns on the part of the United States protecting our population and facilities and that sorts of things. If we did something similar to China, they would have no compunction at all of shooting this thing down, because they don't care about their people. I mean, you know, see how they treat the Uyghurs and everybody else.
That's for sure. That is for sure. Now, it's always a great conversation with you and great insight on this. We'll see how it ultimately plays out. It has captivated the country, though. I mean, everywhere I turn, people are talking about it. Every outlet's reporting on it. It's pretty wild. I think, was there a message to Antony Blinken before he left the States? Was China trying to communicate something to the U.S.? Or was this just part of their normal, you know, spyware and happened to get attention this time?
I think it's all the above. You know, this is a multi-layered thing. They're sending a message to the world, you know, to the United States. They don't like the fact that we support Taiwan. They realize that we are not distracted, but we have a lot of attention placed to Russia's invasion of Ukraine. There's stuff going on in Israel. So why not make life more difficult for the United States, right? Yeah. So you can accomplish a whole lot of things with one action that have impact on multiple levels. And again, it's the complexity of the world and why dealing with these sorts of things can be so complicated in response.
Oh, grateful. Well, people want to check out the index for U.S. military strength. Best place, heritagefoundation.org, right?
Yep, heritage.org/military.
/military. Hey, Dakota, thank you very much. I always appreciate your insights. God bless you.
Love talking with you. Same to you. Thank you so much.
Bye. That's Lieutenant Colonel Dakota Wood. And I'm very grateful for his insight. Served 20 years our nation, now the Heritage Foundation, and a clear thinker. I'm going to take a short pause. We got a lot to get into today. It's going to be a fun show. Stay with me. This hour is sponsored by Creative Planning. How is your Catholic faith influencing your financial future? More info, including disclosures, at creativeplanning.com/Catholic Focus.
The Drew Mariani Show on Relevant Radio.
Thanks for being here. Good to talk with you, hang out with you, look at life with you. About 30 minutes or so, we'll pray the chaplet. Tell one other person today about it, okay? Get them plugged in, especially if they need prayer, they need intercession. Be more than glad to do that. So we'll pray coming up. But I've been following this story in Memphis, you know, and I got to be honest, I'm a little perplexed about the mantra of racism in this. And I was watching AOC and other Democrats the other day when Ilhan Omar was taken off the Intelligence Committee. They took out the race card again and played that. I want to zoom out. I want to talk about this. I think everyone must be respected. The dignity of everyone. And we've said this a million times, you know, people should be viewed on the content of their character, not on the pigment of their skin, right? We know that. That should be the case, not on the color of their skin. So it's so frustrating when I see congresswomen and men, when I see the media come out, they talk about what's happening with Tyree Nichols. And that's a tragic case. Again, my heart goes out to that poor mother, even to this young man. Tyree Nichols was stopped about 80 yards away from his home in Memphis by police, though so far no one has been able to say why he was stopped. So, something went terribly wrong. Excuse me. I had something in my throat. He got up at one point, as you know from the video, and he ran, was caught, subdued, beaten, and was hospitalized for his injuries, and subsequently he died from them. But he was a Black American, right? The story, the way it got played, you would think the five white officers beat him to death, but that wasn't the case. All five of them also were Black. But that didn't stop the media, right? We didn't hear... Van Jones is host of she's a political commentator on CNN. And you should have heard what they were saying about this. I mean, all this is where the rationality has been left behind. The advocates for criminal justice reform, so many other people out there are saying, hey, this is wrong. And it is. I'm with them on this. But here's the headline for the opinion piece from the guy who founded Dream.org. He said this. He says, the police who killed Tyree Nichols were Black, but they might still have been driven by racism. Rashid Shabazz is an associate professor in the School of Social Transformation at Arizona State University. Here's the headline over a piece he wrote for a website called The Conversation, which is where a lot of academics are supposed to be able to make sense to ordinary people. And the headline was this, quote, Black officers aren't colorblind. They're infected by the same anti-Black bias as American society and police in general, end of quote. Two quotes right there. Those are just two examples of the same kind of stuff that's been written many, many times. And these Black officers, they claim, had an animus against Black people. Do you buy that? Do you believe that? I think a more logical explanation is that sometimes power can corrupt. You can go too far. If there's the resisting of arrest and the subject doesn't comply, they run, adrenaline pumps. You officer may want to retaliate. He's not supposed to do that, but perhaps this was just a situation that really got out of control. It was race a driver in this, and why? Why are we constantly bringing forward this mantra about race? Even the Department of Justice has started a civil rights proceeding against the officers based on the claim that they're racist. What? And in just a moment, Leonidas Johnson's going to join me. I want him to explain this to me because I don't get it. I mean, I really don't. I've said many times this year, I can't wait till all the firsts are done. I can't wait till we have the first woman, the first African-American, the first Chinese, it doesn't matter what the race or what the religion is, what their sexual preference is. Once we get them into high office, once we get them on the moon, I just want to talk about the accomplishment. I don't want to have to identify them by their sexual orientation or the color of their skin. Why do we do that? Why is that so important? I mean, the Supreme Court justice that President Biden nominated, one of the criteria was the skin color. They had to be Black, had to be a minority. And I understand, you can make a case for it, but I'd rather just have the most qualified person put forward. And if they happen to be Black or female or whatever it is, great, right? Why should that matter? Why should this stuff matter? Why do we have to talk about this, right? But this is where we are right now. It's being taught in our schools. And I don't think it does the country right. I don't think it does it well when we continue to plant these seeds. Like, I was really disenchanted when I saw those congresswomen the other day talk about white supremacy and the fact that Ilhan Omar has been taken off because of it. This claim of ever-present racism in our country and the scourge we have in this country of slavery, that's horrible. The prejudice we had in this country, horrible, right? And there's no excuse for it. But the claim of racism, ever-present racism in our country, is so deep that even Blacks themselves are racist against their own race. That's what they're saying. And that's what's driving this mentality for reparations, right? San Francisco, I think, wants to hand out $5 million to every black resident that's there. California's on the leading edge of this. $5 million if you qualify as a black resident of San Francisco. And then now there are some people saying, wait a minute, hold on. $5 million is not enough. We need more than that. State of California wants to pay more than $200,000 to black residents. And one black leader said the same thing. That's not enough. So how much is enough? And when can we move forward? We got CRT in our class. You have the 1619 project that the New York Times got started, saying that the roots and the foundation of our country were based on racism, not on this ideal of being able to exercise one's religious freedom, right? Of creating a new country, a republic, where everybody has an inalienable right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness, where there are freedoms to worship and freedoms of expression, where government is limited. We're in a very different place. We really are. I just can't wait till it's all behind us. Leonidas Johnson, he's a speech language pathologist. He's a writer, a podcast host, an actor. He wears a lot of different hats. He's a good Christian man, a father, a husband, an advocate for a post-racial society. And he began hosting the Informed Dissent podcast. This is back in 2020. And if you want to check him out, his website is leonidusjohnson.com. The first name is L-E-O-N-Y-D-U-S, johnson.com. You can follow him on Twitter. And he's got a brand new book coming out, too. I'm going to get you plugged into that. Leonidas, good to have you with me today. Thanks for your time.
Absolutely, Drew. Thanks for having me.
So how do you view this? I mean, how do you view the situation in Memphis is maybe a good place to start, where I'm hearing this was a racist beating. I said to others before, I really think what we need to start teaching our sons and our daughters and everybody, you need to respect the authority. If somebody says stop or get out, you do it, and it can de-escalate. I'm not making any excuses for what these officers did. I thought it was egregious. It was horrible. But suddenly, they're racist. And I think this mantra, and even these congresswomen the other day, saying this is, she got taken off this committee strictly because of race. I'm talking about Ilhan Omar. I don't know how true that is. In fact, I would argue against it. I don't believe it's true at all. But your thoughts on this. I'm going to stop talking. I want to hear your perspective.
You're spot on. And it is baffling. But what people need to understand is what ideology is driving this. On the surface, it looks really complex, like really, it's baffling. It doesn't make any sense. But when you understand what's actually driving it, there's a couple of things. So one thing is that emotional manipulation is very effective, and race is a very potent tool for emotional manipulation. And we saw that with George Floyd. We saw that, with Trayvon Martin. I mean, like, pick a case, Breonna Taylor. Like, yep. Race is a very potent weapon for emotional manipulation. The other thing is, and you hit on this already a little bit, is that they truly believe that the entire structure of our society is imbibed with white supremacy. And this comes from critical race theory. This is the idea that the very foundation of Western culture itself and the foundation of our country, that includes the Constitution, that includes Enlightenment rationalism, that includes neutral principles of constitutional law. All of these things are tools of white supremacy, and they perpetuate oppression. So since they believe that, then everything can be viewed through the lens of white supremacy. That means even if five black police officers in Memphis, Tennessee, beat a black man to death, and it has nothing to do with white people directly, it's still somehow indicative of the system of white supremacy. And this comes from an idea called cultural hegemony that was pushed by Antonio Gramsci, who was a Marxist in Italy.
Wow.
And what the concept is that the elite build this system, right? And the system perpetuates the status quo, and then everybody within that system doesn't realize that they're being oppressed, and the system only benefits the people at the top. So you basically becomes a self-perpetuating system, and the people within it basically oppress themselves because they think it's the normal operation of things. But it's Marxism. It's come straight from Marxism. And I always say, Drew, that it seems like conspiracy theory. I hate saying it because it seems like conspiracy theory. It's like, Marxism, right? But it really, like, if you trace the ideology, you can go back to actually where the foundation of this stuff comes from. It comes directly from Marx. And all we're doing now is replacing race with class. That's erasing the other way around, replacing class with race.
Race, right. Well, my guest today, Leonidas Johnson. If you want to join us, the number here is 888-914-9149. We'll take your calls. You can certainly sound off. He's just written a book, too. It's coming out, I think. It's coming out next week, or did it just get released, called Raising Victims?
Yeah, it's coming out Tuesday.
That's great. I can't wait to. So what's that all about? Did you address this issue in it, I'm assuming?
Yeah, Raising Victims, The Pernicious Rise of Critical Race Theory is the subtitle. And it explains what critical race theory is, how it's infiltrating our society and disguising itself under DEI, diversity, equity, inclusion, anti-racism, Black Lives Matter, et cetera, et cetera. And it breaks apart all of the arguments that underlie critical race theory and really dispels the illogic of it, I should say. And then also provides a remedy because, as you mentioned, I'm an advocate for post-racial society and colorblindness.
Me too.
And I really push that as the remedy for where our society needs to go to deal with race issues. You know what I mean? So, like, if we want to get rid of racism, the ideal is to start treating race as inconsequential to our identity.
Bravo. I couldn't agree with you more. That's where my heart is. And I believe one day we'll be there. We're not going to look at people based on, you know, whether they're male or female or black or white. It's not going to matter. I mean, at least I hope it doesn't. I hope we can look really at what they're able to offer and contribute. And, you know, we're not going to get, you know what, I'm going to stop talking.
Agreed.
I'm going to stop talking. It's frustrating for you. I got to be honest with you. This really frustrates me because it doesn't make sense. It makes no sense. You know, when I hear these arguments that come out for critical race theory, when I see this situation in Memphis, you know, it's just so frustrating because I don't think it does anybody any good. It doesn't elevate anyone. I think it demeans them. It keeps this mantra going. And I think it continues to enslave people in the situation they're currently in. Leonidas, let me take a quick break. When we come back, we'll pick it up and we'll talk more. If you want to get in, 888-914-9149. I have Leonidas, maybe another 10 minutes. His book, check it out. We'll bring him back definitely to talk about it. Because this, we need to have dialogue about this. I think we really need clear, articulate perspective on this issue, because so often the media gives you one narrative, and I think it's poisonous. Raising Victims by Leonidas Johnson. We'll be right back. We'll talk more. Hi, Drew Mariani here. Hey, this September, I'm heading the Relevant Radio's Eucharistic Revival Pilgrimage to Italy with Nativity Pilgrimage. This is available to you. Information available at relevantradio.com/Italy.
Somehow it doesn't mean very much unless you've got someone to share it with.
This is the Drew Mariani Show, the Chaplet of Divine Mercy, coming up next.
Well, good afternoon and welcome back. It is great to be here with you today. I am speaking with author Leonidas Johnson about all we're seeing unfold in the country today, this narrative of race continuing to be played out. We see the Memphis officers that stopped and unfortunately beat to death a citizen, right? And what they did was absolutely horrible. And I can't underline that enough. You know, when they beat Tyre Nichols to death, I don't think it was about race. I think it was about abuse of power. And we see so many other cases. You see headlines, you see CRT, we see this talk of reparations, we see a whole lot of things. How do we get past this? How do we get post-racial is really what I'm talking about. And what do we need to do to change it? Leonidas, it's great to have you with us. Let's grab a couple quick phone calls because I know time's going to fly here. And I'll let you answer Cliff's question. He's in Long Beach, California. And Cliff, I'm grateful for your call. Thanks for dialing in.
Hi, Drew. Thank you for having me on, man. I heard what you said, and I was listening to you about the abuse of power, which is absolutely correct. The other thing, too, is not looking at it from such a situation of race. I'm a Christian as well, and I wanted to just say it was more so something of good and evil and just really understanding, because to do what they did to this human being had to been it was something more deeply rooted than just race. But I also wanted to highlight the fact that in this situation, regardless to race, these officers, it wasn't a question of, do we need to fire them? Do we need to do whatever? They were immediately fired.
Right.
They were immediately, as soon, and the body cam footage was immediately released.
Yeah.
In so many other situations, we don't have the same thing happen.
Right.
And so with good and evil being this, we see what happens on camera. And oftentimes I say, well, what happened? What happened before that? What was going on?
Right.
And in this case, I think it's an eye opener to most people who have that type of perception, that we really don't need to see everything that happened before to see what we're seeing you do at this time. You had a choice to do good or do evil.
Yeah.
And you made a choice.
Yeah.
Cliff,
it's a good point because, you know, when you are giving that badge and that gun, you're given a very noble responsibility. And, you know, you can't let your emotions drive you. I think your point about good and evil is a great one. Leonidas, let me bring you into the conversation. You heard Cliff. He's 34 years old. He's a black male. And he says the officers really, it was an abuse of power. Your thoughts on his comments?
Yeah, 100%. I mean, you look at anybody who's given power who shouldn't have power, and they end up abusing it in a similar situation. Instead of being an indictment of race or an indictment of police even, it's actually an indictment of human nature and what happens when people let power go to their heads and they lose themselves. And you kind of hit on that earlier. But, you know, to the point about the video being released and the officers being fired and things like that, I think in this situation, it was pretty unambiguous. And, you know, a lot of these other cases, you know, we're not really sure what happened. It may look kind of bad on camera. We're not really, you know, but we're not really sure about all the details and all the facts. And then sure enough, you know, facts come out later that kind of shift the narrative and change the perspective a little bit. And so you have to be real careful about, you know, trusting what you see, you know, what a clipped video that you see. Right. But in this case, I mean, it was pretty darn clear that this was not proper police procedure and that they were definitely abusing their power. So they were fired immediately and then arrested and charged. So I think the justice system did what it was supposed to do.
I think these video cameras are the best thing ever. It protects the officer, you know, when he's being falsely accused. It also protects the citizen. And I think transparency is key. I think the way Memphis handled it was great. And the call of the mother, who was deeply injured and wounded by this, I mean, calling for peace. She was a wonderful voice, though, to bring, hey, there's nothing wrong with protesting, but please do it peacefully. Don't destroy the city over this. John's a police officer. He's actually, and Cliff, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you. John's in California as well, and he's in law enforcement, and he's grateful that you're bringing up CRT, Leonidas. John, good to have you with us. Good afternoon.
Good morning, sir. Thanks for having me on.
Morning. Go right ahead, John. Good to have
you. Yeah. I'm sorry I couldn't hear you.
No, it's great to have you with us. Thank you for your service. You're on the air with Leonidas. Go right ahead.
Yeah, no, I just really appreciate you guys. Mr. Leonidas, I appreciate everything you're doing. I'd like to start off by saying, yes, I am a current police officer in the state of California. I can't obviously say where I work for reasons that we all know. But, you know, I'm born Native American, born on a reservation, so I know what socialism is all about. And it just kills me to see all these people demanding, you know, socialism and thinking that's a better way. And I don't know where to go with that. You know, you can vote your way into socialism, but I think they say you're going to have to shoot your way out of it.
Wow.
So I'm hoping that one day people will realize this, but I just wanted to double tap on what the gentleman before me was saying, and he's absolutely right. But as a police officer right now, I can tell you one of my duties is training new law enforcement officers at the academy. And I don't know if anybody's done any studies on this group called the Scorpions, but the police department doesn't hire these people. What happens is the city officials say, we're going to hire these people. They're basically a minority hire. And when I see these names on the list for the academy, and they literally tell us these guys are going to pass no matter what.
Wow.
You know, even if our recommendation is to not have them pass, that they're not ready, they're going to pass anyway, and they know it. So it's not only abuse of power, it's you know, the defund police movement is hurting us really, really bad. It's very hard to be in law enforcement right now because you have people that are quote unquote city officials on the city boards that are former criminals themselves making decisions on who gets to be a police officer now. And, you know, the lack of training just because we have to brush them on by, and this, no matter what they do wrong, scenario training or whatever training, what have you, they pass no matter what.
John,
and,
Wow, that's a frightening prospect. So an abuse of power from administration as well. Let me first thank you for your service. I know it's tough out there today to be a police officer. I'm grateful for it, and it's good to have well-formed men out there. We need you to train. I think one of the crises, and I talked about this a few days earlier, we need to train, and we need better training, and we need longer training for a lot of these men so we can learn de-escalation and make sure situations like this never take place again. Leonidas, I only have a few minutes. I want you to respond to John. I've got about maybe a minute and a half for you. He brought up socialism, as you did too, critical race, and a lot of other issues. So I'm going to give you the final thoughts.
Yeah. Thank you for your service. And I'll echo what Drew was saying. I know it's tough out there for officers and law enforcement in general. I will say I have heard that from multiple different LEOs that around the country that, you know, these guys are getting into the programs and they have no business wearing the badge, but they get passed through by the city because hiring standards have been lowered. And there was actually a police officer who said he has a personal friend in the Memphis PD who said that exact same thing about those five officers, that they're fairly new to the department and that they were hired by the city and, with lower hiring standards, and that they really had no business being there. So it really gives insight into what's going on in the country with law enforcement and with the defund the police movement and the anti-police rhetoric and what kind of effect that's having, not just skyrocketing crime, but it's also lowering standards around police departments. Yep. And then we're getting lower quality officers. Yep. So it's a ripple effect, and then it's just going to be an endless cycle.
Mr. Johnson, I'll tell you what. Come back. We'll talk. When your book hits the shelf, and I know that's this coming Tuesday, reach out to my producer, Tom. We'll get you back on. We'll continue this conversation. I am up against the clock right now. I'll be back. The Chaplet is straight ahead.